the Eternity Podcast Network, eternitypodcasts.com.au.
Hi, I'm Jenny. Just a quick warning, the following story contains some elements that might be disturbing for some to hear. If you're one, we'd encourage you to consider calling Lifeline.
Hello, I'm Jenny Salt, and welcome to Salt, a place where we'll enter into the lives of people and discover heartwarming, sometimes challenging, yet always distinctive gospel stories.
One night I was asleep and I heard this terrible noise on the roof, and it was bullets. And the soldiers had come to our village, surrounded our houses, and they said, if we find any Ethiopians living near you, we'll kill you all.
My guest today is Ruth Myers. In 1960, Ruth left Australia to work as a missionary midwife with the Somali people. Government decisions, coups, sudden deaths, all disrupted plans and brought about challenging changes in her life. Ruth wrote about these experiences and so much more in her memoir, When the Lights Go Out, and she shares them with us today. Welcome, Ruth.
Hello, Jenny.
Ruth, I'm really excited that you're here today, and I'm so looking forward to hearing some of your story. Perhaps we can start with where you grew up.
Well, I actually grew up in several places because my dad worked in the post office, and I went to 8 different schools all over New South Wales, but the most was in Albury. So when I finished school, I went back to Albury and did my general nurse training in the Albury Base Hospital.
Kind of like going home, was it?
It was. It was a small hospital with about 80 trainees.
Yeah.
Very good.
When you think about your childhood, what sort of memories do you have? I mean, what sort of child were you, Ruth? Were you a nice, quiet, sweet little thing?
No. When I went to school at 4 years and 3 quarters, I was left-handed, and the kindergarten teacher slapped me every time I used my left hand, and I think that was a bad start because I ended up always being the clown of the class, a rebel, didn't work. My school days are not good memories as far as gaining a good education.
Yes, okay. So you went from being left-handed to right-handed.
Right-handed
under sufferance.
Writing.
Yes, okay.
Left-handed for everything else.
Okay.
Ambidextrous for as a nurse.
Right, which might be very handy.
It was. I could sew people up in either side.
Well, we'll hear more about that later on in terms of the sewing up and that kind of work. Did you grow up in a church-going family?
They were Presbyterians by tradition, but they didn't go to church. We all went to Sunday school. And in those days, the Presbyterian church was liberal, so I did not grow up in an evangelical situation.
Hmm. So you went to Sunday school, and do you have any memories of Sunday school as a little girl?
Not good.
No?
Boring.
It was boring. Okay. Well, we'll move on from your childhood.
Yeah.
And you went after school. What did you do? You mentioned nursing. Is that what you went to straight from school?
When I had one more year of high school to go, my dad came home and said he'd made an appointment for me to do an exam as a telephonist. And I was heartbroken at leaving my friends, not the education. And so for a year I was a telephonist and I was absolutely hopeless. I'd get all the cords mixed up. And in the end they said, let her get her eye test, and if her eyes are all right, we can't keep her. She's hopeless. And so I left being a telephonist.
So when you say you got the cords all mixed up, what does that mean?
Well, in those days you put one cord in a hole and said, number please, and they'd tell you the number, and you'd take the other cord and put it in the number they wanted, and you had to keep them all straight.
Right.
But that didn't fit me.
No. And why did your dad sign you up as a telephonist?
Well, he left school at 13 and ended up as a postmaster, so he couldn't see any point in staying at school when they needed some money, and he thought she'll get married anyway and it'll all be wasted. So I was really sad with him for a long time.
So after your telephonist phase, You did go on to be a nurse. You did your general nursing at Albury, is that right?
Yes, that's right.
And what are your memories of those days?
I wanted to be a nurse to look after people, but again, being precise and correct in everything didn't suit me. But I really loved looking after people. But I was often in trouble as a nurse too, especially in the operating theatre.
Right.
One of the surgeons nearly pulled my thumb off when I got the scissors stuck on it.
How did you get the scissors stuck on your thumb?
Don't know. I pushed them down too far.
Okay.
But basically I enjoyed a lot of nursing. Like Albury Hospital was very friendly and I loved the patients and I loved my fellow nurses, but not the precise medical stuff I needed to know.
Right. And then from there you actually specialised in midwifery.
Well, I went down to King George V, which is attached to Prince Alfred. So I went from 80 nurses to 1,000 and I did midwifery and I absolutely love midwifery. Mm.
Why did you do midwifery?
Because I was going to be a missionary.
And why did you decide then to be a missionary?
Because I'd heard a missionary talk once when I was 12 and I was really interested in going overseas and working with people. It was just a dream I had.
Mm. Mm. When you decided to be a missionary and when you went to do your midwifery for that purpose, were you a Christian then?
I think I was a Christian because I can't ever remember not believing in God and Jesus. But doing midwifery, there was a group of pupil midwives that were keen Christians and through their lives and their witness, I came and going to a young people's meeting in the assembly hall, I made a commitment that gave my life to Christ. And through those Christian midwives, I learned what it was to have a quiet time and witness, and that was the beginning of my really walking with the Lord.
Mm. Do you remember when you went to that meeting, what was said, or why was it that particular meeting that you really understood what it meant to be a follower of Jesus?
Yes, it was in John 7, if anyone believe on me, from him shall flow rivers of living water. And I thought, I don't know that. And they had an appeal and people went out, but I thought, no, a Presbyterian wouldn't go out there like a heathen. But when I went home, I knelt down by my bed and I asked the Lord to forgive my sin, and I stood up a different person.
That's wonderful.
And the preacher was Jeff Bingham, who was going to Pakistan as a missionary. And I'll never forget that night.
Oh, that's wonderful, Ruth. So you were about to complete your midwifery.
This was at the beginning of my midwifery.
Oh, it was the beginning. Okay.
Right at the beginning.
Right. But you're on track to be a missionary. Mm. Did you go from training as a midwife to being a missionary? What was the process from being a midwife to actually becoming a missionary?
I worked as a midwife for a while to get experience, and then I went here to Sydney Missionary Bible College in 1958-59.
And what was that like? I think things have changed a bit since then.
That was a big shock to the system because I'd never been, apart from these midwives, I'd never really been with evangelical Christians. And when I first got here, I told a joke doing the dishes and they said, if you keep on with those kind of jokes, you'll be asked to leave. And I couldn't see what was wrong with it. And some of the rules were terrible. Like, we had to wear hats if ever we were speaking in a meeting, even a young people's meeting, you had to wear a hat and gloves. And I used to argue about that and get into trouble. So there were a lot of rules that I found hard, but it was still a wonderful 2 years. I'll never forget it.
The rules, did they prepare you for life in Africa?
Well, wearing the hats was good. Because in Somalia you had to wear these chiffon scarves.
Yes.
Because the women never had their head uncovered. So I was ready for that.
Yes.
But the rules at the dinner table of the way we had to eat and pass things and all that was useless because the American missionaries had terrible manners.
Right. Okay.
And I thought, what did I learn all those manners for? And there was gender apartheid, where the boys were on one side of the room and the girls on the other. We weren't allowed to talk to them. I might have got married if we'd
you
been
could have.
That
was a missed opportunity there, Ruth.
Yeah, all those lovely boys.
One of the things I love about my work at Sydney Missionary and Bible College is chatting with people who are thinking about deeper study of God's Word. So, for example, if you're currently serving in another country, why not check out SMBC's fully online Master of Intercultural Studies program? Or you might be thinking about pastoral ministry here in Australia or overseas in a cross-cultural context. Why not check out our Bachelor of Theology or Master of Divinity? Head to smbc.edu.au or call us to explore all the opportunities from undergraduate through to postgraduate doctoral studies. So you had 2 years at Bible College. Then what?
I didn't tell you how good it was. Learning around the Bible.
Yes.
Mr. Kerr was the most wonderful example. He was a Presbyterian, but he was just amazing. And so by the time I left in 2 years, I knew my way around the Bible. I was grounded in scriptures and I loved it.
Yeah. And Mr. Kerr was the principal.
And we also had a missionary every week. So one lady came from Africa, and that was when I knew that God wanted me to go to Africa.
Okay. So before then, you were just thinking missionary work somewhere.
No, I thought of Southeast Asia because someone told me that the China Inland Mission took the cream of the crop.
Right.
And I thought I'd fit in there.
You would.
But it wasn't to be.
No, that's right.
I loved Hudson Taylor books and I always thought I'd join him.
Yes. But you did end up going to Africa.
Mm-hmm.
So in broad strokes, you were in – what countries in Africa did you – because you were there for 23 years in Africa, is that right?
Well, I was really called to Somalia and go work among the Somalis, but because they had a communist coup and a war, I moved from Somalia to Ethiopia to Kenya, so in the 23 years. But the bulk of that time was in Somalia, in the Somali Republic, which was Italian Somalia.
And what were you doing in Somalia?
We had a hospital. I was a nurse there. And the midwifery was wonderful. Mm. That's what we did most of.
Mm. And when you talked about being ambidextrous when it comes to sewing on both sides, were you doing some sewing as well?
I was doing it all the time because of the women's, what they did in circumcising women, every time they had a baby they had to be cut and then sewn up.
Yeah.
And sometimes people would call me to do the hard bits because I had my left hand.
Yes, your left hand and your right hand. Ruth, you obviously loved being in Somalia and you loved delivering babies. Do you remember any particular baby that you delivered that stands out?
Well, the first one I delivered by myself stands out because it was before our hospital was finished and I was in a Somali hut with just a woman. She was a traveller and she'd gone into labour and her husband had come out and begged me to go. So I sat on a little stool and she was on a mat and I sat there all night wondering, thinking about King George with the lights and the doctors and the delivery table and all that was there. And I had a mat, I had a grass mat and a little stool and I wasn't sure. Because the women had been circumcised and sewn up, there's only a little tiny hole and a little bit of black hair came out and I thought, oh, the baby's coming. And I was nervous, but it all went well. And the little baby girl was born. And I was so happy, just the mother and I, no neighbours poking their heads in because no one knew her. And then her husband arrived and he said he wanted a boy. And I said, well, it's a girl. And he said, well, how much is? I said, it's 10 shillings. That's like one Australian dollar. And he said, oh, I thought it was 50 cents for a girl. And I said, it's the same price. But it was just so wonderful. And I went back to see that mother and there she was sitting on the ground with a little baby girl. And that was my first one. There were lots of others, but that one was a big landmark for me.
How long were you in Somalia? I know that 23 years all up.
14 years in Somalia.
14. And actually, Ruth, you wrote an amazing memoir called When the Lights Go Out. And you write about some amazing times. And in fact, one person wrote about your memoir. They said that it was not really about you, Ruth, but it was about the God who is always there in the darkest times and the joyous times. What were the darker times for you during those years?
Well, that's when the lights go out, was my brainwave, because in the hospital at 10 p.m. we'd have to turn the lights out because the generator would go off, and we'd light hurricane lanterns. And that became a parable for me, that every time we went into a dark time in our work in Somalia, God would turn on another light. And the first one was they'd given us freedom of religion when we went to Somalia, but then they changed that and said that we could not witness about the Lord Jesus anymore. That was made illegal. Our boarding schools had to close because they said we had to have a Muslim sheikh in the school. And so we thought that was the end. But the funny thing was, that was the beginning, because people read in the paper that we weren't allowed to talk about our religion, and so they'd come and ask us about it. And that's when we got our first conversions. And so one missionary was murdered by a Muslim priest, and things like that happened, and yet that would open up a new avenue for us. And so it just seems like when it's all dark, God opens up another avenue for you, a new light goes on, and you learn through the hard things.
And there were many hard things, there were many traumatic things that happened to you as a group, as Christians, but also to you personally. Can you share something of those times?
Well, in Ethiopia, we were still working among Somalis, but there was a war between Somalia and Ethiopia. The people that drew the maps of Africa, I don't know who they were, but they put the Ogaden Desert into Ethiopia, but it was totally populated with Somali people who spoke the Somali language, except for the Ethiopian governors of the otherwise they were all Somalis. And the Somalis had turned communist in the early 70s, and then thrown the communists out and decided they wanted to take that part of the Ogaden Desert from Ethiopia. So they sent these armies of freedom fighters into the Ogaden, and by the time early 1977, every village in the Ogaden had been captured by the Somalis except the one we were in, which was called Kalafo. And one day a plane landed, and it was a United Nations health worker who was looking at smallpox, got out of the plane, and he said, "Don't you know that you're cut off from everyone? You're the only people that the Somali army hasn't taken. You ought to get out of here." Well, we did. At the time, our Land Rover was broken and the roads were all mined. We couldn't get out. And then as we prayed about it, and straight after this man left, he didn't offer to take us in his plane when he left. One night I was asleep and I heard this terrible noise on the roof, and it was bullets. And the soldiers had come to our village, Kalafo, and surrounded our houses, and we found ourselves in their grip. There was nothing we could do. And they said, "If we find any Ethiopians living near you, we'll kill you all." And that was the beginning of our connection with the war. We were taken captive by the Somali freedom fighters, and the two single ladies were taken aside and raped. And I don't know. What stands out for me during that time was the way God stood with me, because when I saw this man with his dagger saying, "Take your clothes off," I said to the Lord, "Now when he finishes, he'll kill me." And God said, "Well, whose body is it if he did?" And I said, "It's yours. I gave it to you." And the room was filled with light. The man wasn't cruel. And what I remember of that time more is God's presence with me. And he let me go. As you can see, he didn't stab me.
No. Oh, that is very traumatic.
Well, I didn't fight him either. And I learnt later that's what you do. You don't fight if you want to stay alive.
So you and the other single missionary woman were separated, and
different rooms.
And you were both raped.
Yeah.
And did the other missionaries know what was going on?
No. I don't know why they didn't know. I knew as soon as they said, "We want the two single women." I thought everyone would know because I did, but it didn't enter their head. And I'm glad, because if they'd tried to fight them to stop them, there could have been deaths.
What happened after that, Ruth? So you immediately after you both the women, you and the other single missionary woman, came back into the group, and then what?
Then our Somali guard who worked for us came and he said, all these soldiers have gone into hospital to steal the medicine. This is your chance to get out. So we got out of our compound and up to where the Ethiopian police were. And after that, an MAF plane came and rescued us. And in the end, Ethiopia won and Somalia. All the people that we'd worked with, all the Christians, everyone that had been our friends were taken as prisoners into Somalia and were in prison camps for a long time.
Do you know what happened to them?
No. I mean, that's all. Somalia's just, ever since then, Somalia's been a disaster. The tribes have taken over. There's no good government. And there's a rebel group called Al-Shabaab that killed Christians and caused terrible trouble, bombed schools. So we could not be in Somalia now. The only time that we could have been in Somalia were the years that we were there. There's been no freedom before or since.
Amazing.
If you're anything like me, you want more than just doom and gloom as you look out on the world. And Eternity News is here to help. Seriously Good News is a two-minute podcast that brings a range of good news stories in an easily digestible format delivered straight to your device. It's fast, it's friendly, truth-based and hope-filled, and far better for you than a daily dose of cynicism. Subscribe to Seriously Good News wherever you get your podcasts.
And so you went from Ethiopia. Where did you go after that?
I worked, I came home for a year and then I went to Kenya and we had a radio program there for 5 years.
When you went home, were people aware of what had happened to you?
No, I never told my parents. Actually, there was no debriefing in those days. This was 1977. Debriefing wasn't known. And so the mission director just said, don't tell anyone, otherwise the single women will all be frightened. So I only told a couple of my best friends. I didn't share that. I couldn't tell my mum and dad. I thought I didn't know how they'd react.
No. So how did you then process that and how did you work through, I mean, how did you deal with it, given you weren't really given any opportunities to debrief or to be counselled?
Well, as I said, God's presence was so close and I'd escaped with my life. Yeah. But I went to see Corrie ten Boom in the hiding place and when I saw the bayonets that the soldiers had with Corrie's father, it brought back the bayonets our soldiers had and I cried and I couldn't stay in the film. I cried and cried and said, take me home. And that was it. It broke it.
So after a year, you went back and you went to Kenya.
Yeah.
And then you were involved in a radio ministry.
Yeah.
What did that look like?
That was hard for me because I wasn't used to being in an office typing. And the people said, don't go near Ruth, she'll only talk. She's got to type these radio programs. And so for 5 years I did that and I found it wasn't me. The radio program's been used more by God than anything we've ever done. There are hundreds of Christians through the radio program. It's still going every night. The gospel goes into Somalia through the Far Eastern Broadcasting Association. So it was worth it. But sitting there, I learned touch typing, typing Somali. I didn't like it, but I did it and it was worth it.
You did it for 5 years actually, which is amazing. Did you get other avenues to talk apart from
when people would come and interrupt you? We had a Sunday school. And local Somalis live in that part of Nairobi. It's a slum part.
Yeah. So you never got back to Somalia after you left?
No.
So after 5 years in Kenya working with the radio ministry, what then?
I came home And I went to university and got an honours degree in psychology. And a friend of mine, Kath Donovan, who'd been a doctor in Papua New Guinea, set up the Christian Synergy Centre. And we worked with missionaries. I did psychological assessments, debriefing. We did seminars. We had the most wonderful ministry you could ever have.
Yeah. I remember that ministry. It was amazing. Was that in part because of your own experience of no opportunities to debrief or process your experiences in a cross-cultural context?
That's part of it. But mainly my gifting is that area of being with people, helping them. I love psychology, whereas I didn't enjoy the nursing training. I love the psychology. I could read a psychology textbook and love it. Everything about it I loved. And sitting with people in my office with a whiteboard, debriefing them, it was all my experience helping them. I just couldn't have had something that I loved better or was better suited to. I must have seen 1,000 missionaries. I didn't count them, but...
That's wonderful. Did you ever dream or hope that you would go back to Africa?
We went back and did seminars in Ethiopia. No, I liked it at home. I loved what I was doing.
And you wrote the book. How long ago did you write your book, When the Lights Go Out?
I think it was published in 2016, but I'd been writing it for ages.
And why did you write it?
I thought it'd be good. And I love writing.
It is good. Let me say, for those who are listening, if you can get a copy of the book, you will laugh and cry throughout. It is the most wonderful book.
I really love writing. So I enjoyed it. I only wrote about Somalia, but the first editor said you need to write why you went to Somalia and what happened afterwards. So then I did the top and tailed it.
And Ruth, you never married. You missed that opportunity while at Bible College with the gender apartheid. When you look back, what do you think about that? When you think about having never married and, you know, all that you have done?
I feel sad I never married. I see my sister, 6 years younger than me, and she's had 4 sons and she's got dozens of grandchildren and great-grandchildren, and I feel sad about that. I feel sadder about that now than I ever did. But then I think... I would have hated her life. She stayed at home, she sewed, she housewife, she's clean, I'm not. She just loves that kind of thing. I wouldn't have liked it, so why would I swap a really interesting, exciting life for that? For the fact that I haven't got children and grandchildren, so I just think God led me to what he wanted me to do, and whatever you lose, you gain in another way. Make the most of it.
I asked you about the dark times of when you were in Ethiopia or Somalia or Kenya. What are some of your most joyous memories?
Delivering babies, knowing that we saved so many lives. We never lost a mother, hardly ever lost a baby. Seeing people who could be healed, get better, seeing some Somalis come to the Lord. The missionary fellowship was amazing. They're still my best friends. There were so many positive things, and I loved it. I love languages. See, I didn't do well at school, but when I had to learn Somali, I just sailed ahead of everyone because I was motivated to learn it.
Yeah. Another one of the joys that you refer to in your book is the fact that people came to know the Lord Jesus. Do any of those times stand out for you, Ruth?
Well, another one was a very early experience. When I finished language study, because the hospital wasn't finished, they asked me to be the hostess at the guest house for 6 months, which was crazy because I couldn't cook or do anything. But anyway... The lady that was the cook, the Somali lady that was the cook, she was married to a Muslim sheikh. And one time one of our young workers became a Christian, and outside the house that day we heard this terrible screeching and fighting, and this lady, this cook, was scratching this fellow and fighting him because he'd become a Christian, and we had to pull them apart, and the man was all scratched, but he went home, and we knew how fanatical she was. But as my job as a hostess, I used to tell them a Bible story every morning from the Old Testament with pictures. And this lady's name was Howa, and she got really engrossed in these stories, and she'd say, oh, that was wonderful. And strangely enough, after a few weeks of this, she became a Christian. She was our first Somali woman Christian, and she was just radiant. And because she'd had her four sons, her husband never divorced her. He put up with her being a Christian because she was a son producer, and he didn't want to lose her. And do you know, this is that was mid-1960s, and now I have just been able to talk to her on the phone, and I just, one of my happiest experiences was looking after her when she got sick and seeing how she'd grown in the Lord and how she loved the Bible.
And when you think about this phase of life and how God works, you know, in and through his people, what do you see God doing through you and in you now, and where he has you now?
Well, I do things in our church. I do the prayer diary. I help lead a Bible study. I make friends. I speak at things.
Yes, do podcasts.
Yeah.
And when you look back and you think about that child growing up in Albury and all sorts of places, and that telephonist who got her cords all tangled up,
and the theatre nurse who got a
scissor stuck on her thumb. And then thinking about those years in Africa and then that ministry with Kath, what do you, when you look back to all those things and so much more, what do you look back to, or what comes to mind?
Sometimes I feel sad about things that were failures, and then I rejoice in what God's done, in Jesus dying and forgiving me. And he says, look, just remember you're forgiven, and forgive yourself. So that really helps me, but also sharing with people what God has done for me.
That's great, Ruth. It's so good to hear your story. And for those who can get the book, I really recommend it. I think you will just love it when the lights go out. Ruth, thank you so much for sharing with us today.
My pleasure.
I hope you've enjoyed being part of the conversation with Ruth today, and importantly, been encouraged to be salt and light to those around you. Next episode, tell me, who do these remind you of? 10-9-8, God is great. Who's the king of the jungle? Ba ba, do ba ba, be strong and courageous. Well, he's on the show for our final episode of the season. We'll see you then. Salt is hosted by me, Jenny Salt, and produced by Mark Hadley. Editing by Hadley Inc. For all show notes and more episodes, head to snbc.edu.au/salt. Salt is a Sydney Missionary and Bible College podcast and part of the Eternity Podcast Network, an audio collection showcasing the seriously good news of faith today. Thanks for making Salt possible.